This is a Tadat podcast.
Welcome to the Tadat podcast. I am Claudia Salgado. In this episode, we travel across the Atlantic to the warm waters of the Mediterranean and visit Spain virtually. Spain is one of the first countries in Europe that dealt with COVID-19 and related quarantine. How did their tax administration deal with this unforeseen pandemic? What can we learn from their experience? These and more questions will be answered in the third episode of the Tadat podcast special series on COVID-19. This episode was recorded on May 15th, 2020. Today's moderator is Mr. Juan Toro, Assistant Director of the Fiscal Affairs Department. Over to you, Juan.
Dear audience, I hope that upon hearing this podcast, everyone is well during this health and economic crisis. Here at the International Monetary Fund, we have been trying to support countries, and on this occasion, we have the opportunity to share with you an interview with Jesus Gascon, who is the Director General of the State Agency of Tax Administration in Spain. Spain is one of the countries that has suffered quite a lot from this crisis. I was reading and seeing the figures that sadly the number of people affected is about 250,000, and with about 10% of the population passed, which is clearly a pretty strong blow to the country and to the families of those affected by this very significant crisis. My name is Juan Toro. I am an assistant director in the Fiscal Affairs Department of the International Monetary Fund. Thank you very much, Jesus, for taking the time to do this interview. These are difficult moments in Spain, and above all, you are living through the figures in the face of the economic impact that we at the fund have tried to support the countries. The fund, in fact, has been supporting countries financially, including with fast credit lines in response to requests. To date, that number of countries that have applied for financial assistance exceeds 100. One of the areas where a lot of work has been done to support countries is the development of analysis in different areas, particularly the revenue administration and tax policy. As we said, Spain has been hit hard by the pandemic, and that has significantly affected the whole context in which the Spanish tax administration works. How was tax compliance and the agency's work affected in the first phase of the COVID-19 crisis?
Thank you, Juan. Well, first of all, thank you very much for this opportunity to explain what we are doing in Spain and to share it with the whole community of tax administrations around the world. And thanks to the International Monetary Fund for the effort it is also making in compiling all these experiences, which has been very useful to the countries to know that our colleagues in other parts of the world are doing. Indeed, in Spain, the situation is complicated. We are still in a phase of decreasing negative figures. But even the tax administration itself has been affected very hard. We have had sick people, and we still have them. We have even had 3 deaths. These are very hard times because you cannot even honor the dead, say goodbye to them properly. So we have suffered directly from the crisis. The truth is that for us, as for everyone, it was an absolute surprise because we lived in a world that was not perfect, but things were going well. The end of 2019 was good. Tax revenues were growing above macroeconomic indicators, which means that voluntary compliance was going well. The inland revenue was presenting good management results, but when we began to hear the news of what was going on in China, and especially in Italy, which is a country very close to us, not only geographically but also culturally, we began to worry and began to see what they were doing. And at that time we decided, well, to check all our procedures, our contingency plans for data processing centers, communication infrastructure, internal and external digital communication channels.
And this was the beginning of the crisis?
At the very beginning.
When Spain had been infected early on?
Of course. The north of Italy was beginning to take action, and then all of Italy. We said that this could happen to us in a short time, and it did happen to us in a week. So we did a checkup. We saw what the critical services were, and we started to study how we could generalize teleworking. The truth is that it was a decision that came in handy later, because, of course, teleworking for us until then consisted in distributing laptops, notebooks to some of our staff, not many, so that they could work remotely. But we saw that if we had to close offices, as was happening in the north of Italy, that was not going to be enough. We were going to have to allow people to connect, to allow our public employees to connect from their homes by giving them a password so that they could access their remote desktop and be able to work. Then, well, we saw that we could do it, that we had to buy licenses, and thanks to that effort, then we were able to do it because that's how it was.
This was, sorry for the interruption, was this before the government decreed any kind of measure that had to restrict public access or interaction with taxpayers?
Yes, it was. It was a few days earlier because at the time, it was already clear that there was going to be an economic crisis that was going to affect us. Because with nearby countries in a crisis situation, the logical thing is that this would affect imports, exports, and tourism, which is very important for Spain. So in those days, the government did decide to grant a six-month tax deferral for self-employed people and for small businesses. But it had not yet been decided to close down activities, to close down offices, not even to close down schools, colleges, and universities. And of course, this is already a revolution because we immediately started to have problems of conciliation. Our employees who no longer have a place to leave their children and who are thinking that they have to telework because they cannot leave their children at school as usual. So that's when we really started to make teleworking widespread. At first, there were areas more affected than others within the country. Madrid was one of the first, and as well at the time, the operational decision, of course, was to give the possibility of teleworking to everyone who had options from the technical point of view, either because they had a laptop provided by us or because they could simply connect from their home. We had agreed that the procedure worked, and we let them connect.
And how did they organize that work, Jesus? In the sense that there are people within the personnel of the tax agency who, for example, can easily work with computers and work at home. But there are other people who are in what's called frontline interaction with taxpayers, and certainly those people could not go to the office because they were closed. How was all this work managed? To give it continuity, to operate in certain critical areas and other areas that are less critical or that have to be affected because there is no interaction with the public. How was that whole process managed? Now this means a big challenge in terms of organizing work teams. How did the agency's management team get structured? How did you organize the emergency teams and the regional teams? Because basically a situation occurs in Madrid, but there are also all the regions which, in the case of Spain, are very diverse.
We had to approve operating protocols and we established working groups on a top-down scale, starting with the manager, or WhatsApp groups, or self-management groups as best as possible to replace those continuous meetings that are held in the offices. Because that is the normal way of working with a direct connection. Also, the use of video conferencing platforms such as WebEx, so that everyone is connected and information flows from top to bottom and from bottom to top. That has been the structure. Then, of course, we had to make decisions about how to interact with the taxpayers, because we closed the offices, we stopped serving them face to face. Fortunately, we have a website, we have an electronic headquarters that the taxpayers usually interact with. We have electronic notifications, but there are groups that still have problems relating to us on the internet. We had to strategically reinforce the telephone services so as not to generate stress. We also proposed to the government that the tax deadlines be suspended in such a way that anyone who received a notice on a tax issue would have peace of mind by saying, good, until at least April 30 to May 30, this has no legal implications. Nevertheless, we decided that such notices would not be given, because why send a notification to a taxpayer who is confined to his home, who even if you tell him that he has a month to resolve the procedure, the first thing he's going to do is get nervous and try to fix it. like go to the bank and pay, but the bank is only open for a few hours a day and our offices are closed. So we decided that any action that might have negative consequences for the taxpayer would not be taken. In other words, we are going to work internally to manage the procedures, but not to notify or contact taxpayers to give them bad news, and if we do, give them only good news. With regard to the returns, the claims, the appeals that we had pending, when they are estimated, then we do communicate them to the taxpayer. But well, it was a decision to postpone negative decisions because that was going to make life difficult for citizens. And if the citizens were nervous, it would have made life much more complicated for us.
One of the things that we have seen in analyzing the experience of different countries is that there are certain elements that tax administrations, which have managed to make progress in certain strategic areas, have somehow been in a better position to respond to this crisis. And there are three elements that we have identified, and that, in fact, listening to your story, it is clear that technology is an important factor. One is the digitalization of the tax administration in the sense of being able to have interactions both internally with staff and externally with taxpayers. Thus, more automation, flowing information, and technological support. The second one, you mentioned it at the beginning very well, when you started preparing even before the pandemic affected Spain, that is, to have contingency plans, to have plans for continuous operations. And thirdly, to have that capacity to manage tax compliance by assessing taxpayer risks, those that need facilitation, or others that need closer management or control, and then apply different responses depending on the extent and nature of the compliance risk. What is the experience like? How does your experience distinguish the importance of each of these elements when facing a crisis like this one?
These are key points, and digitization is fundamental. All the formalities, all the procedures, and the relationship with the taxpayer must be able to be done through telematics. That is, the combination of telecommunications and computer systems. This is essential. Another thing is that there are some segments of the population that have difficulties, and for that, it is necessary to design alternatives. That's what our offices are for, well, we can have them open. But we also have the telephone, which we have strengthened as much as we can with a system, as well as outgoing calls. In other words, the taxpayer asks us for an appointment and we call him or her. As everyone is at home, it is easy to find them. At the moment, we are trying to solve their problem, but everything has to be digitalized. And then we also talk to colleagues in other administrations, even with Spain. Of course, we have a different perception of what electronic filing is. It is not that the taxpayer can send you an application or can initiate a procedure using telematic means. It is much more. The procedure must be completely subject to electronic processing, and that means that all the procedures must be carried out within the information system. The information system must be unique. Everything must be recorded there, because otherwise, of course, it is absolutely impossible in a crisis situation to resolve it by means of teleworking. Teleworking is where the staff member logs in remotely and accesses his or her virtual desktop and can do exactly the same thing as if he or she were in the office. They can connect to the databases, they can resolve files, they can access internal networks. The only thing I can't access is his personal computer desktop in the office, which we recommend you don't have anything particular about. So this is absolutely critical because, of course, I am now meeting with other administrations that say no. What I do is every Monday I tell the staff to come with a USB to upload information, take it home, work with it, then bring it back, and then dump it into the system. Well, it has to be all within the information system. The information system has to be unique and has to be accessible from a single point, because if not, we are lost. And this is a mistake that is often made, to have separate databases, each for its own access. That is not acceptable in a crisis situation. And this is one of the clear lessons of digitalization.
Jesus, and as far as ensuring the continuity of the agency's operation, what can you tell us?
Of course, contingency planning. This is another fundamental issue. We do indeed have a strategic risk management system. We have reports on critical services. There is a critical services report for 2013, which is key for us and was a great starting point. Those contingency plans are the ones that allow you not to start from scratch. Of course, I also have to acknowledge that never in our contingency plans was something like this foreseen, because we were clear we had defined critical service as the attention paid to the taxpayer and offices. We did not think of a scenario in which no office in Spain would open to the public, or not. So there are things you can't have planned. But it does help you because, for example, in the area of customs, the customs office in Spain depends on the tax office, since we have defined which were the critical services that immediately allowed us to know which people had to go to work to make a physical examination of the goods or to facilitate customs clearance that could not be stopped at a crucial time for the country. Of course, after critical services analysis, we will now have to review these contingency plans, but we had a great starting point.
Very good. What about risk analysis?
We have internal audit cycles that every year check these contingency plans to keep them up to date, and that has put us in a better position. Risk analysis, of course, is fundamental. We apply risk analysis to all our procedures, to extensive control procedures, to customs inspection, to enforced collection, and we have annual planning. So, when you have to be flexible, you have to change that planning. You have to reevaluate the risks. If you don't have a risk analysis, there is no starting point. So now, for example, we have a big liquidity problem in the country, and we are speeding up returns processing. Well, within the refunds, perhaps the most important, the most critical, are the VAT refunds to exporters. Well, normally, we check those returns before issuing the VAT refund. In other words, we carry out prior control verification, not posteriori control. But in these circumstances, we can change the step perfectly well and say, given the exceptional situation, I prefer to do the ex post control, because the important thing is that the money reaches the exporters. That means modifying those risk profiles. So, well, we change the risk factor. The risk analysis allows us to identify the taxpayers who we think, although they have a liquidity problem, are solvent, and that we are not going to have problems later on to recover the money in the event that we return it and they prove in a subsequent check that their declaration return was inadmissible. And we do anticipate these kinds of declarations returns because we will check them afterwards. Therefore, the risk analysis is essential. And now, of course, we will also have to adapt that risk analysis precisely to what I was commenting on. Because it is very important to know that the breaches that will occur from now on, that the breaches are going to be more than we had, simply because the country's economic situation is worse. We have to see the reasons for the breaches, because if they are due to a transitory problem of a company that is in a bad situation, we have to give it the appropriate treatment, very different from one that directly intended to defraud, or that the liquidity problem has become a solvency problem, which is going to affect the viability of the company, and that is going to be a significant tax collection problem for us. So the risk analysis for us is also a critical point. I agree.
Jesus, this interview has been very enlightening. I am very grateful to hear about the experience in Spain. I hope that the audience will draw lessons from this. Without a doubt, I think administrations will benefit from hearing how the Spanish tax administration is facing this crisis and how it is planning the way forward. One last word from you before closing, Jesus.
Simply to thank you for this opportunity and wish the entire tax administration community good health, because now health is no longer a topic, it is a need, and the priorities must be very clear. My encouragement to all.
Thank you all very much for listening to this excellent interview. Thank you.
Thank you, Juan and Jesus. And to all our listeners, we hope you can join us again. Please stay safe and healthy. This episode was recorded on May 15th, 2020.
The Tadat Podcast is available free of charge. The views expressed in the Tadat Podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent those of the International Monetary Fund or the IMF policy. Materials from the podcast may be reproduced with proper attribution. Comments and correspondence may be emailed to podcast@tadat.org. Tadat is a collaborative undertaking of the following partners: the European Union, France, Germany, the International Monetary Fund, Japan, the Netherlands, Norway, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the World Bank.